I'm Dr. Trish Murray. I am an osteopathic medical doctor and have been practicing medicine for 15 years in the beautiful White Mountains of New Hampshire. I started out as a primary care physician, and then I went on to specialize in non-surgical orthopedics and osteopathic manipulative medicine. But over the years, I realized more and more that the underlying inflammation, toxicity, and autoimmunity that people are suffering with are the root cause to most health problems. So, I also went on to become a specialist in functional medicine. My website is www.tmurraywellness.com, and I encourage you to go to my website. There is a great deal of free information because my mission is to empower you to optimize your own health through education, community, and support. So today our podcast is with Hank Letarte from White Gates Farm in Tamworth, New Hampshire. Hi, Hank.
Hello, doctor.
Yeah, why don't we start out today? We've talked once before, and what is your website?
The website is whitegates-farm.com. So there's a little dash in between gates and farm.
Okay, and how do people reach you other than obviously your website, but what are the ways that you sell your products?
So we have a farmer's market in Tamworth that we attend. It's all year long. That's Tamworth Farmer's Market has got their own website, and they'll say what days there are. We also attend a farmer's market down in Boston. We have a great farm stand here at the farm. So people come up. They can drive up. It's open every day, 7 days a week. As well, my cell phone number is on the website, and people will call me up. Depending on what they want, they might want special needs for an event coming up, or they might want to make a special salad mix or whatever. We grow both beef, chicken, and hogs, as well as just a whole array of vegetables all year long, both winter and summer.
Yeah, and you were saying that you grow in the winter quite well. Tell us about that.
Well, it all comes down to sugar. People ask me, how do you grow in the winter?
Hmm.
Say, well, it just takes a little sugar, that's all. Sugar is not really what most people think you'd use as an amendment for growing vegetables.
Hmm.
But nature does. So I just work with nature. As a matter of fact, the more you work with nature and the less you try to buck that system, the better off you'll be. So we try to stay with what occurs naturally, and we just basically give it a little bit of help. Our farm is both meat and a vegetable farm, and we use all of our waste products to create compost. So our farm is basically a byproduct is vegetables and meats, and our product is compost. We use almost all the compost that we make here, and compost is basically a mixture of carbon and nitrogen, and through a process of heating, because of a natural occurring breaking down of the nitrogen, those nitrogens will infuse into the carbon sources. So what's nitrogen? That could be grass clippings, it could be vegetables, it could be anything that's green. And what's carbon? Anything that's brown. Leaves, wood chips, old dried hay, anything that will break down. So those two combined, it takes four ingredients to make a compost. That's air, water, carbon, and nitrogen. Just like making bread, you need yeast, you need flour, so you need water. Well, these four components in the right ratios will heat up, they will kill pathogens, they will kill harmful bacteria, they will kill old seeds, so that now what you have is an organic product that is natural, that comes from plants, so it will go to plants. Oh, wait a minute, there's cow manure there. Yeah, but what are the cows eating? Oh, they're eating grass.
Mm-hmm.
So it comes from plants and it goes to plants. When it does that, the system is already pre-built. Otherwise, if we didn't have a composting system, for the amount of leaves that fall down, I mean, in your yard, my God, we'd be swimming in leaves.
Exactly. And most many people that have learned some of this get back to the old ways mm-hmm. are doing little composts in their, at their own home. Like I would not call myself a farmer. I have a couple of raised beds, and I do love to grow vegetables every, you know, warm season. But I also have a compost bin right outside my kitchen door for the winter, mm-hmm. and then I have a compost pile out in the backyard. So, and I use that within my gardens. Sure. But obviously, you're doing it on a much larger scale.
I have to. I have a lot more than just a little bit of coffee grounds.
Yeah, exactly.
So back to the sugar thing, basically what happens is when you fortify your soils, and everything in gardening, if you want to be a wholesome gardener, really comes from the soil. We are what's in the soil. Mm. If you look directly at the soil analysis and you see that there's micronutrients, those are things that we need, and I'm sure you can tell us a lot more about what we need in our bodies than I can, but I know that my plants, they will need boron, they will need calcium, they will need all of these trace minerals in order for them to work better. And that all comes from compost because it was there originally. If you go to, everybody knows fertilizer, everybody knows what a 10-10-10 is, nitrogen, potassium, phosphorus. Those are the minimum, those are the trace basic minimums that you can put on plants. Unfortunately, they make plants look just as good as one that's organically grown that has all of these trace elements. So you can't tell. As a consumer, you say, why is this one $2 and this one is $5? But when you do an analysis, you look at how much more is in this organic plant. So growing with compost, what that does for us, especially I'll go to the winter growing, we grow in greenhouses or high tunnels. Our biggest high tunnel is 30 feet long and 120 feet long, 30 feet wide. And we have 8 huge rows of beautiful green crops all winter long. They grow in there without any heat. We have no source of heat other than what comes through the plastic and from the solar gain.
And I was in there today with Hank, and as soon as I walked in from outside, today is March 24th, and up here we just got, in the last 2 weeks, as much as 3 feet of snow. And we already hit the first day of spring, I realized, but there is still quite a bit of snow out there. And it was probably, what, 50 degrees, maybe 45 out there today,
Sure.
And when we walked into the greenhouse, my glasses fogged up, and I had to take my coat off because it was so
76 degrees.
76 degrees. And there wasn't a heater. That was the plants and the sun doing their thing.
Yeah. Wow. However, on the other side of that coin is that at night, it gets just as cold inside as out. Mm. So how do these plants survive at 10 degrees and they're full of, you know, there's lettuce in there. There are Asian greens in there and spinach. How does it survive at that cold? It's pretty scientific. And what's fun about it is when I explain to people, our vegetables are so enhanced by the compost that they actually overdose with natural sugars. So look at this. Here's the plant. It's really healthy. It's got everything it needs. It's got too much sugar, so it off-gasses sugar. And when it does, there's a natural occurrence where bacteria is lying and waiting in the wings, and it moves in and attacks the sugars and creates alcohol through fermentation.
Right, which is fermentating is the probiotic concept. The idea that when a bacteria ingests sugar, it ferments it, and then you have a probiotic. So it's the concept of, you know, whether you're making yogurt, whether you're making kombucha, this is the same bacteria ingesting sugar to feed them,
sure.
and then they ferment and they give off, you know, processes that are positive for us.
This is why that not only will they not freeze, but they won't look real happy at 6 degrees. But I've seen them sitting there, and you know, you give it an hour and a half, 2 hours, and the sun comes out, or even it gets a little bit warmer, and they perk right up. But they are the sweetest, they are the best vegetables. Years ago, I'm talking the 1890s, how this whole concept came about was in Paris. In the 1890s and 1800s, we were moving through transportation with horses. And New York City was basically a huge, big mess of horse manure all year long. This is why women wore high boots. This is why they had stepping stones to go across some of the roads.
Right.
Well, Europe, Paris was the cleanest city in the world for one reason. They had a program. The farmers would come in with vegetables and they would go back out with horse manure. And the horse manure would be used in their gardens where they made these giant cold frames, huge cold frames. And for every foot of horse manure and bedding that they put in the cold frames was 1 month earlier that they could harvest vegetables in the middle of winter. Now, France is on the same latitude as us. So they were growing all winter long while we were sitting here waiting for spring. They had these big glass jars, and they would plant lettuce and then painfully move these glass jars if the sun came up, put them back on. But they had these beautiful winter vegetables that they would bring to the French chefs in the wintertime. The chefs couldn't wait for winter vegetables. They were the best in the world.
Right.
Everybody gives credit, and I'm going to take a little away, but everybody gives credit to the greatest chefs in the world. Oh, the French chefs, they're the best chefs in the world. Wait a minute. The French farmers were the best farmers in the world, and if they weren't carrying these French chefs, the food would never have been as good as it is.
Exactly. It always does come down to the farmer, really, because that's where you get the food from.
That's right. It's not the guy with the truck.
No.
So we have the same vegetables growing here, and this is why they don't freeze, and they taste, I mean, you tasted some today.
Oh, it was amazing.
They're great.
Amazing. They were so sweet.
Sweet.
And not in a, you know, people think, they hear sugar, they hear sweet, and they think, oh, wait a minute, I'm not supposed to have too much sugar, because then that's going to lead to diabetes. Well, folks, we're talking about carbohydrates. Carbohydrates are a macronutrient. I've given another podcast where I talked about the macronutrients in your diet, proteins, carbohydrates, and fats. And you want 40 to 60% of your diet in carbohydrates. But folks, the thing that's causing obesity and diabetes is the processed packaged donuts and crackers and muffins and bread and the carbohydrates that have chemicals in them, not the fruits and vegetables that we're talking about now.
Absolutely.
Fruits and vegetables coming naturally from the earth with natural processed, you know, not processed, but natural sugars in them to make them sweeter are absolutely delicious. You've never tasted anything so wonderful, and it is never going to give you diabetes or anything bad like that. It's going to make you healthy. Actually, Hank, you and I were talking at one point, and you were telling me about a physical you had to take for some either, do you remember?
It was my DOT driver's test for when you have a tractor trailer license.
Yeah, tell me about that, because I want people to hear about that, because you are how old?
66.
You're 66 years old, and you had to go for this DOT driver's physical.
Yeah,
and what happened?
They give you the eyes and the ears and the nose and the throat, the whole nine yards, and then they have to check and just see my blood pressure, which was fine. I think it was 112 over 70. My heart rate was like 64 or something. And the doctor said that he was doesn't give out 2 year physical certificates for anybody over 55. He's never given them out. He gave me a 2 year certificate. I don't think he was 50 years old. He might have been close, but he said that. What do I do? He asked me what I did, and I said, I'm a farmer. And he says, well, you're in great shape. He said, you look in great physical shape. He says, everything looks wonderful. He goes, and what do you eat? I said, I eat all my own vegetables and all the meats from the farm. I eat eggs. And I eat 3 eggs a day, and I cook it in leaf lard. And we make our own leaf lard here from the pigs. And I do all of the things that in another world you'd say, oh, you're going to die. That's too much cholesterol, etc. But it's all natural. And he was amazed and said, I need to come up and buy some meats from you.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And it's interesting because I just applied for a life insurance policy, right, through the American Medical Association. And the company called me and said, well, you're going to have a physical. I said, that's fine. And so the nurse called me. And she's made an appointment. And she said, when I come, I'm going to have to do a physical. I'm going to have to draw some blood. I'm going to have to get some urine from you. You know, you're going to have to pee in a cup. And I was like, fine, sure. No problem. You know, and I filled out, someone else had previously called me and asked me about my medical history. And in fact, I'm 55 and I don't take any medications
you
or anything
great.
Like that. Thank you.
You look great.
And I eat, you know, I live the way I preach. And so she arrived on the day of the appointment. And I was waiting, you know, and she arrived, and I said, hi. And she says, guess what? You just need to sign this piece of paper. You don't have to do any of this other stuff. And I said, really? Why? And she says, because your medical history is so clean that you don't have to go through any of these other hoops that the typical person would because you don't have any medical conditions. And I said, that's awesome. Bye-bye. And I signed her paper. So obviously we both know that if you eat cleanly, you live off the earth as best you can,
Sure.
Then, you know, you're going to be healthy because the body likes to come to health. So tell us more about, you know, the spinach and the turnips and the lettuce greens, these Asian greens. How long does it take from seed for you to grow them, and how many times are you able to harvest them throughout the winter?
So what happens is in the early winter or late falls, we try to get our plants in the greenhouses and get them started around the 1st of October. They have to have a certain amount of daylight hours on the young plants so they can establish a root system. Once they get established, they will grow pretty well. These falls have been longer, so November has been warmer throughout the years, and so we get a good jump on them, and we can start to harvest. And we always have vegetables for Christmas. Sometimes, if we can get a really early jump on certain vegetables, we can have some Thanksgiving carrots and some Thanksgiving lettuces. So that gives you an idea that when is Thanksgiving versus the last week in September.
Right.
But then things slow down a little bit, and we plan for that, but we plant enough, and we do plan for things to slow down so we can keep our customer base satisfied. And once we go through the January doldrums, when it gets really cold and it's really, they say it's getting lighter every day, but you don't notice in January.
Right.
February comes along, and then everybody perks up. And although it's darn cold, and they say, when the days get longer, the cold gets stronger, it doesn't usually happen in February because we have a stronger sun, and we have more sun days, I believe, in February than we do in March.
Okay.
And so February really gives these plants a jump. And even though March is a cloudier month, you felt today, it's a cloudy day, but it was 76 degrees and there was absolutely no sunshine.
Oh, it was beautiful in the tunnel.
Yeah. So we'll cut one row of spinach, and we'll have at least four or five harvests on one row. And a row can be 30 inches long and 120 feet long, 30 inches wide. And we have eight rows per greenhouse.
Wow.
So you can imagine that we can put on a pretty good size basket.
A decent amount of produce. Yeah, and I learned today that you obviously don't pull the plant root out. What you do is you cut it at its base. And is there a certain amount that you have to leave in order for it to continue to survive?
So with spinach, we pinch the leaves.
Mm-hmm.
We don't cut them, we pinch them. And so we pinch those leaves off. We have some Asian greens, some tatsoi, bok choy. You can take, in fact, even the Asian mixed greens, they're almost like a mixed salad, a salad mix. You can mow them down almost like a little lawn, so they're about 3/4 to an inch high, and they'll grow back. Inside of 4 weeks, they'll come right back. It's called cut and come again. There's another salad mix called Salanova. These are all organics from Johnny's Seeds up in Albion, Maine.
Okay.
And so these Asian greens that they've developed, and a lot of this has come back and come to us in the last 10 years. They've looked at them. Now, why is it that Koreans have all of these huge selections of greens? I don't know. I'm curious about that. And I'd like to go to Korea to just see South Korea and see what they like. But they have a wonderful mix of these tasty little table turnips, we call them. They're white turnips called hukari, about the size of a golf ball. The tops are edible. They're beautiful in a salad. The turnips are like a little gem, and you can use them as a nice decor, but they make a wonderful addition to a salad. It's like an incredibly mild radish.
Yeah, I tasted one today. It was not hard. It was supple, and it was juicy, and it was yummy.
Oh,
you
yeah.
know, and the greens were great, too.
So a lot of people don't know that there are really some other greens besides iceberg lettuce out there.
Right. We all go to the grocery store and you eat iceberg lettuce or the romaine lettuce, and that's kind of our world. And,
yeah.
and what would you say are, let's say, the top five things you grow in your winter greenhouse?
So spinach is number one. Uh-huh. By and large, if I had another house, I'd have it full of spinach because people love it. And I've had many people come to the farm in the winter and I give them a sample of spinach, and the first thing they say is, just like a little kid, I don't like spinach.
Mm.
And I say, well, it doesn't really matter. You're going to try this because you're here, and I want you to try it.
Right.
And then they give me this description of, well, this isn't like the spinach I've had before.
Exactly.
You know, this isn't the same type of spinach. Oh, really? Okay. So, you know, maybe a lot of people who haven't had a a vast sampling of winter vegetables and don't really like vegetables in the winter, I don't blame them. I mean, most of the stuff has traveled many, many road miles in order to get here, and so it's got days and miles on it.
Exactly.
But, close, local is, I think local even can some days trump organic, but we're both. But, spinach would be number one. I think the Asian greens mix is number two. We sell a lot of that each week. And then it comes down to maybe like the tot soy or the bok choys, or the little Hawkeye turnips. Those are would be number three. I think number four is we've got a couple that we tried this year, and they're a salad mix that we're and it's like a bacata, which is those are again Asian. They grow about 8 inches tall. They've got sort of like a stem on them that's very soft, and it's sweet, really sweet. We have found this to be maybe even more popular than the turnips this year. Hmm. So it's moving right in and pushing a little bit towards the spinach.
Awesome.
Yeah,
it's amazing. And why don't we finish with talking about vitamins and minerals and in the plants. You know, what's happened to our soils across our country over the years?
Well, I think the Great Plains that were great, where we grow wheat and corn in the same monocrops. I mean, some man can grow 13,000 acres of corn, really. Mm. Some of those plains had roots that were 6-8 feet deep. These grasslands, just amazing. And they were self-promoting. Every year they would compost and they would fall down. And it was just an amazing, amazing amount of compost in that soil and balanced nutrients to sustain that. Today, now, it's pretty much burned out soil, and they just use 10, 10, 10.
Right.
The old thing.
Just keep throwing it in just to get them to grow, but it doesn't have all the vitamins, all the minerals, and all the what are called phytonutrients that people need. Huh. And how is, obviously, your farm different from that? And what about the soils here in New Hampshire?
Well, the soils when I started, this farm was basically a wood lot, and in 1982, my wife and I bought this, and I started clearing, and it didn't have a worm on it. I mean, this was pine ground, and it had rocks, and it had what they call forest duff, which was old twigs, pine needles, pine cones, and maybe a few little tiny ferns growing, but it really was very, I would call it dead soil.
Mm.
There wasn't a worm to be seen. When we moved here, there was not one single worm on any part of this land. Today, you go out into these fields, there's 28 acres, and there's cow pies out there. You know, we drag them with a net as soon as the as soon as the cows are finished. But in that soil, there is one worm after another. That tells you when you see earthworms in your soil that you've got good soil. It may not be balanced perfectly, but it's good, healthy soil. So we use compost. We have earthworms both in the greenhouse and in the soils now. And we do soil tests semi-annually. We use a company out of Virginia, and they will give us right down to how much manganese do we have in our soil? How much boron? So these are all supplements that we can add that we may not have available through our composting process. But putting those in is not like cheating. It's not like changing the soil. It's like bringing in trace minerals that the soils need to be perfectly balanced. And they're organic. I mean, all of these inputs, like calcium, that's an organic.
Right.
So we just basically work to make our soils. Not only do they have, do they have organic matter, but they also have the micronutrients and the microchemicals that we need.
Awesome. So that tells you, folks, that, again, to buy local and to buy organic is going to trump buying anything in the grocery store that was industrially raised, in the essence that they're the industrially raised or traditionally raised farming system is in soils that are depleted.
Correct.
And soils that are more local, where the farmer is exactly has animals that and using the compost, but then also the vegetables, and it's all put together, and the vitamins and the minerals and the nutrients can be naturally grown, if you will, and processed and recycled, then you're going to get what you need, and you may not need as many supplements. So this is why you want to get back to as local as you possibly can. Would you agree, Hank?
I do. I do agree. I think in a lot of ways, food is medicine, good water is medicine,
absolutely.
Exercise is medicine, and you have to think about how many people handled what you're eating before you did. And if it was just one farmer, probably got a good thing going on there if it looks good.
Absolutely. So, Hank, what, to end with this, any 3 to 5 things that you would recommend people even do at their home if they are a gardener that you would say they should do for themselves to try and grow better and have better soil?
Okay. First thing, coming from a background of being a golf course superintendent and being an agronomist, is one first thing everybody needs to do, including the most professional farmers, is a soil test. A soil test is a roadmap to fertility. So without taking pot shots at, I think, and you don't even know, I, as a college graduate of the soils, would not do anything without a test.
And where would you recommend people, let's say in New Hampshire, take their soils?
Or
do you buy a kit and test it?
No, that's something I would leave up to the professionals. No, now, it all depends on the level of gardening that you want to do. UNH offers a service, and for the home gardener and for the hobby gardener, I think those work well. I think they're not very expensive. They have a little form you fill out. You mail in a sample. You get your recommendations back, and I think they will actually give you recommendations based on what you're growing, so they can help you with that.
Awesome.
Yeah, the place where we use it is a little bit more of a science lab. They have a little quicker turnaround. They're a little pricey, but we get our information in 4 days, and we need to be on the money with
it. Right, you need to be doing it a lot more often than someone like myself.
So soil test is one thing, and that's number one. As far as composting is concerned, I think anybody can compost. If you have a space to do it, you can compost. Compost can go the other way. Besides being good, it could be bad. So you could actually make something that's not fully composted, a little bit toxic, and you could get some E. coli going in a bad composting. So I teach about composting. I will certainly advise people about composting. I'm not going to try and install a scare tactic here, but composting needs to be fully composted in order to be right for your garden. So people say, "Oh, I wish I had some chicken manure to put in my garden." I don't think you do. I think the composted chicken manure is a great thing, but that's not the raw chicken manure. And old world practices are old world.
Changed
it a little
so
bit.
So the compost is not just the poop.
No.
it's more than that.
Yeah, no, it's not even a resemblance of what was in there.
In there.
Yeah, right.
Okay.
No, it's totally different. So composting is a big thing. And then, of course, as far as depending on what you want to grow, a lot of people have all the great intentions of growing a wonderful garden, and then the weeds get them. Well, at our level here, White Gates, we don't have but 2 people working in the garden, and we produce truckloads of vegetables. We don't have time to weed. I'll repeat. As a farmer, I don't have time to weed. So obviously, we're organic, and we don't spray for any weeds. So I must have a trick or two up my sleeve.
Yeah, I would say so.
Tell us, please. I grow on black plastic, which is a product that you can lay out into your garden, and it keeps the weeds from coming up through, and it keeps the moisture down. So you're using less water, you're saving a lot of time, and you can have very clean vegetables. So we always have really clean lettuce, too. And all the vegetables we pick are clean because they're grown on black plastic. It also discourages a lot of bugs because it's hot, and they don't like that. So that's one thing you can do, is try to eliminate some work that you don't want to do. You can water under the plastic with this drip irrigation, and it uses less water, and you water where you need it, and you're not watering in between the rows where the weeds would love to grow.
Yeah, they make also those home, last year I used them, where you can buy the hose where you turn it on, but it you put the drip, as you're saying.
Hose.
Leaker hose, is that what it's called?
Well, you can do that. Those tend to have, they're unregulated. You can put a little bit too much water, and then you can have problems.
Okay.
Depending on the soil. One of the things about growing that way is that once it's planted, you have a minimal amount of weeding. If you have anything that's exposed, you're going to grow a weed. So in between our plastic rows, we cover that dirt with straw. Not only are we keeping weeds out, but we're also adding to the content of the organics that are in the soil.
Right.
It's a great way to do it. So, in other words, work smarter, not harder. If you're going to have a garden, really have a nice garden, and don't let that garden run you. You run your garden.
Yeah, so it's nicer to enjoy it rather than to be beaten up by it, no doubt.
I think the other thing is timing. Sometimes people get a little too antsy. You know, spring's here. I've been inside, and I'm going to start my tomatoes and start them now. I think that's a big mistake. You want to have tomatoes started and plants started when it's ready. So you work your way backwards. Tell me what day you're going to put those plants outside in the garden, and I'll tell you what day you want to start them, depending on what sort of a setup you have, whether it's going to be a window box or whether it's going to be a little mini greenhouse or whatever. And I hate to see people get frustrated and say, yeah, I had a garden, but the weeds got ahead of me. You can't do that. I was going to make a great dog out of this, but he just bites everybody he sees. So you don't want that.
Yeah.
You know?
It's usually not the plant or the dog. It's the person doing the growing or the training of what's, supposed to be grown.
And enthusiasm is wonderful. I like to keep it, but you want to keep it going in the right direction. And, nobody likes discouragement, right?
Oh, absolutely. Well, thank you, Hank. This has been awesome.
You're welcome.
Yeah, remind people, what's your website again?
So it's White Gates with a plural. So it's GATES, whitegates-farm.com.
Excellent. And I'm sure we'll do more of these in the future.
I look forward to it. Thank you.
All right, great. So I hope this podcast has empowered you to optimize your health, because that truly is my mission, to help educate people so that you can learn more and more how to find your way to health and wellness and feel as optimally healthy as you possibly can. Please go to my website and learn much more about the information you need and about the services we offer at my office. It's www.tmurraywellness.com. I also have my own curriculum or program I call the DENT curriculum. That's D-E-N-T, which is an acronym for diet and detox, exercise, nutrition, and treatment. And I offer weekend conferences where anyone in the world can come and learn about how to put a dent in your chronic disease processes through exactly that, diet, detox, exercise, nutrition, and treatment. So again, please go to my website, tmurraywellness.com, or give my office a call at 603-447-3112 and learn more.